What does event production, piloting an aircraft, and mastering productivity have in common? Today, I'm having a conversation with Mr. Bobby Dutton, who found his success at the intersection of technical expertise and creative expression. From DJing his own prom to building a revolutionary event company, Bobby shares how thinking like a pilot transformed not just his business, but his entire approach to life and time management. Whether you're struggling with email overload, calendar chaos, or finding your focus in a distracted world, this conversation will give you practical tools to engineer your success. I am Dr. James Bryant, and I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
I am Dr. James Bryant, and I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast.
This year, we've been meeting engineers and people who have been doing great things in our industry, who have been leveraging creativity to new heights and using their engineering background in ways that may not necessarily be intuitive for most of us. And today's guest is no different. We have Mr. Bobby Dutton, and he is here to just talk about his journey. So, Bobby, welcome to the show.
I'm excited to chat with you.
Well, tell the listening audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I went to school for computer engineering, so that's what qualifies me for this conversation, I suppose. And right after I graduated, I spent a lot of time writing cold fusion code for defense contractors and deep in the cube world and all that. My passion at the time was events. So my first big foray into my own business was a company that I created called Groove Boston Mission 6, which is now called GBM6. We were all about using technical engineering pieces and gadgets to create huge, complicated events and experiences. And our why is to make people happy. And we just have so much fun building these huge concerts and projects all over the country.
When did the passion for events start to show itself for you?
I mean, when I was little, just like most engineers, I wanted to take stuff apart, try to put it back together, ask what this button did. I just needed to understand things. And I think that that curious mindset is something that a lot of us have in common. And as I got a little bit older, I was interested in places where I was seeing tech applied. And an example of that is the musical at middle school or high school. I was interested in the art, the creative side of it. Part of me wanted to sing and audition and perform. But I was also wondering what was going on in that little shadowy room in the back of the auditorium with all those cool buttons and the couple of people in the dark. What are they doing and how does that work? And a really cool place where it all came together was the world of DJing, because I said, all right, I could be up there on stage being creative, making people happy, and pushing all the buttons. Okay, this is interesting to me. So that's what sparked as kind of my calling within the event space and as a unique way to apply this understanding.
So your creativity, the engineering and entertainment came to a intersection at DJing?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
I want to know what songs are in what key, at what tempo, know how to use equipment to line up new tracks and separate frequencies and mix them back together. The art of mixing is such a cool, highly technical, highly creative skill. And as I got good at that, I could tell that this was a really interesting way to apply all this knowledge I was working so hard to accumulate, specifically driving that into a whole new business and market. I learned to challenge the way colleges were going about huge concerts. I basically had this question of, what if we took everything that was great about this frat party or this school dance in terms of musical variety? What if I could make that your concert and then build the whole concert container around it as a highly technical delivery system to just make it the best night of your life?
So that's what you do in terms of making people happy. You make it the best night of their life. They experience your events. And it's this combination of where creativity meets technical excellence.
Yes. That I've learned is where I thrive. That's my flow state, right at the intersection of creative and tech.
You started out DJing. I suspect that you were DJing in high school and then things began to morph from there.
Yeah. I mean, I DJed my own junior prom and I wanted to. Part of me felt a little bit left out, but if I hadn't been, I would have just been wishing I was pushing those buttons anyway. So it worked out just fine. Through school, I was at undergrad school at Tufts up here in Boston, and I was part of the AV team, which was actually its own company on campus. So I was managing dance shows and auditoriums, and I got to set up for concerts. And that put me in touch with the folks that actually booked the concerts. So I was getting to understand the concert market there. But my big thing was going to my own student activities advisor, who I knew from working around the office. And I basically said, like, I need you to give me a chance because I've got an idea for what might be the greatest concert this school has ever put on for its students. But it's not an established thing. It's not a proven model. I can't really tell you I've seen it work before, but I believe it could. And that was what got me my foot in the door and got our first show, which would launch a whole company and 10 years of touring and really put us on the map in the event space.
Well, so what was that first show?
It was called Fall Ball. And basically, a lot of colleges have their big spring concert at the end of April. Classes are over. They bring a big artist to campus and everyone goes outside in the sun and has a big party and a big artist. That's great, but that's the way concerts have been since the 1950s. You put as much money as you can into the best artist you can afford, and hopefully that artist is brilliant and talented and wonderful and everyone has a good time. And for a long time, that model worked. But the problem now, as you might imagine, is the way people listen to music has changed a lot since the 1950s.
Yeah.
I remember when I was growing up, I had to scrape $20 together, get a ride to Newbury Comics or Tower Records, buy a CD, and now I'm literally and financially invested in these 18 tracks. So I'm going to learn them. I know I want one of those tracks, but I'm going to get the rest of them. So I was motivated and incentivized to commit to one artist for extended periods of time. That's not how it is anymore at all. Think about how we consume music now. We want the best music from all the greatest artists in the world, from every genre, across the board, and we want a really well-curated, dynamic, versatile, you know, music stream coming at us nonstop for free, automatically. And so if you try that old concert model with that consumer mentality in mind, it just doesn't work. If I say I've got this much money to get one artist, and it's definitely not the huge artists of the world that everyone loves, it's something less expensive than that because of, you know, financial limitations. So most schools are still doing it that way, which is, hey, we know you want Taylor Swift, but we got someone less than that. We hope you care. We hope you'll listen to this artist for an hour. And the short answer is they won't. So we came in and said, we know how to entertain people for an hour plus with all the great music, including all those huge artists, including that variety you now crave. So the DJ approach musically is brilliant. And the best part is there's not a lot of hard cost to it. So I could DJ for you and squeeze 200 artists into an hour, keep you very much on your toes musically, and you haven't spent a dime on talent and you haven't limited the music at all. So now we have all of your money to go do the fun part, which is the tech. So I would go to these schools and say, I know you didn't like what you got when you spent $100,000 on an artist. Let me show you what $100,000 of lasers looks like. And it's a very different show.
I think you really hit into that key concept where you are meeting people where they are. And if the market is demanding this type of variety, then you've set up your company to be able to provide that type of product. One of the things that we've talked about before was this whole concept of think like a pilot. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So like most people, I actually have more than one passion. And the other one has always been airplanes. I was obsessed with those from a very young age. And at first I thought this was kind of a whole separate lane from the tech and the engineering and the event stuff. But when you think about it, that intersection between something emotional, something powerful, and something extremely technical and physics-based, aviation fits that exactly. And so in hindsight, it makes total sense that I was drawn to this. So I was, when I was little, same time I was taking apart TV remotes and trying to figure out that sort of thing, I was staring at every airplane that flew over my house growing up. And when I got a little older, when I got a credit card, one of the first decisions I made for myself was I need to learn how airplanes work and I need to learn how to fly them. So I got my private pilot's license right out of college, adored the idea of learning, why is this happening? What is the physics behind this? What is the science? How does this work? It was another area that just totally captivated me. And by investing in that understanding to get myself in this place where I could just be above the clouds, 10,000 feet off the ground by myself under my own power, there was something really magical about that. And I just loved it.
Interested to know, how do pilots think?
Well, it's about prioritizing. And that I think is the biggest takeaway that's affected me on the ground as a human, as a manager, as a business owner. And people today can relate to feeling overwhelmed or stressed out. In fact, I think if you ask anybody how they're doing, 99% of the time, at least in my conversations, they don't say, awesome, thanks for asking, how are you? They say, oof, just so busy, you know, just crazy. You know, another day in paradise, so much going on. And that is true. I mean, we're living in an age of unprecedented amounts of information flying in all directions all the time. You know, every morning we wake up and we've got notifications and emails and text messages, and it never stops. Very rarely do people feel like they're focused and present and, you know, without distraction. And that won't work for pilots. We know that. It would be very easy to get overwhelmed in the cockpit. But think about how pilots sound when they get on the intercom. We can all remember, you know, boarding a plane and you hear that guy say, ladies and gentlemen, this is your pilot speaking. We are going to be flying at 38,000 feet, going about 700 miles an hour, but it's no big deal. I do this all the time. Like it's this like cocky, hyper-confident persona that we've heard 1,000 times.
Yeah.
It's not because they're bored. It's because they're organized. They have done this flight 5 times in the last 2 days. This is not hard for them. It is complicated and it is highly technical and advanced. But what they have learned to do is prioritize. They are focused on one thing at a time. And that's something that none of us can say on the ground. And so instead of having 500 emails in your inbox that are all competing for tiny bits of your attention and getting it, I'm more able now to say, right now I'm in an interview. Right now I'm talking to Dr. James. Yes, there are going to be 20 other things to deal with, and they will come at me in order at the right moment, and I will give them my full attention when it's their turn. But right now, they're not taking away from my mind. And that's something we all need to learn how to do. And by learning to harness that focus and cultivate my own stream of information and attention, I'm able to make much better choices. I'm able to be much more present in the moment. And that makes me a better leader and human in general. But when the hard times come, if there's a crisis or an urgent situation pops up, that's when it really matters. And that's what keeps me happy, productive, and focused.
So thinking like a pilot puts your focus in on what it needs to be on in that moment. And you're able to clear out all the rest of the distractions because this is what you need to focus on right now. Many people struggle with being present, thinking about the next interview or the next thing or the next client, but there is power in focusing on where you are, when you are right now.
Yeah. And I think multitasking is an interesting, trendy word. And everyone thinks they're good multitaskers, but there have been studies that show if you've got 5 things going on, your apparent IQ is lower. You come across as a less intelligent person because your intelligence, which might be high, is too distributed. You're spread too thin, literally. Multitasking is a myth. It's not a real thing. And don't get me wrong, like you can chew gum and drive a car at the same time. I suppose that's multitasking, but that's because chewing gum doesn't need a lot of your conscious thought. And what's really happening is you need to understand how you shift between tasks. So I've gotten really good in the way that I structure my day on the calendar, knowing how my brain is willing to transition and ramp from one, you know, paperwork thing to a artistic thing to a sales meeting. I know how to manage my time in a way that is one thing at a time, but flowing in the right order at the right rate. And the result of focusing on one thing at a time instead of 5 things at a time, you would think it would be less efficiency because I would have had 5 things done and now I only did 1. but that's not true because I crushed one with my whole attention and now I put it away and now I'm on to the next thing. And if you fast forward, I literally feel now that I get more stuff done in a day than I used to in a week. And just by that kind of repetition and honing that intentional planning, you see the results.
Leadership comes with high expectations, too many responsibilities, too little time, and the constant pressure to keep up. If you're feeling stretched then, you're not alone. At Engineer Your Success, we help leaders take back control so that they can lead with confidence, delegate effectively, and stop running on empty. You don't have to choose between success and sanity. Let's build a leadership plan that works for you. Visit EngineerYourSuccessNow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you. What are some of the cues that you listen to when you're looking at your day? Because you said you understand how you transition between tasks. There may be somebody that's listening to this and is like, that sounds cool, but I don't even know where to start. So can you walk people through that journey?
Absolutely. The first thing you got to do is make sure your calendar looks exactly like your actual day. And if you're stressed out, look at your calendar for yesterday and say, is that exactly what I did yesterday? Most people will look at that and say, you know what? No, I took the dog for a walk. I ate lunch. I went to the bathroom. I had this idea and started brainstorming. I got this text and talked to this person for a half an hour. I scrolled social media for 2 hours. I'm not saying any of those things are wrong, but if your calendar had a different plan, of course you don't feel like you nailed your plan if that's not what you did. So it's hard to plan tomorrow because tomorrow is a mystery. It's easier to look at yesterday or look at today right now and make those adjustments so you get in the habit of your calendar really does need to reflect your real life time. And I'll do stuff like that. In fact, yesterday I was doing something and I was like, I'm going to keep going on this thing because I'm in the zone and I want to, and whatever is next isn't time sensitive. And I literally changed my calendar because I said, I'm going to do this one later. I'm going to do this more. And just because this is how tightly my calendar now is connected to my time, I extended the appointment I'm in now. So it really is changing. I didn't have to do that, of course, because that's all going to be in the past next time I look at it, or I'll never look at it again. But by really being intentional with that, that's key. Another specific thing is book time on your calendar to work on your calendar, which sounds like some weird recursive inception thing. But for me, Monday mornings, I'm going to get up. I'm going to have my coffee. I'm going to take about an hour to process emails and just get a feel for what's going on. Because, you know, there are times, of course, when some big client says, hey, I want to talk to you as soon as possible for this huge opportunity. Like, I'm going to shove everything aside and get that done.
Yeah.
But so I need to get a pulse on what's going on so that the calendar is reactive and appropriate. But as soon as that's done, I'm going to take an hour and look at my calendar and say, okay, what's going on this week? Okay, tomorrow I got that podcast. Okay, maybe I want to prep for that over lunch. Okay, next week I got nothing going on Tuesday. Maybe I'll grab lunch with my client at MIT and just, you know, that's a good way to use the time. And so I'm taking that time, and my whole task at that moment is calendaring. And a lot of people don't have that. And so that's the key to get proactive about making this intentional calendar. Looking at yesterday, looking at tomorrow, making sure it all lines up.
Yeah, and part of that is just being honest with yourself, right? The whole ideal of making sure that your calendar reflects what actually happened. There is some disjointedness that happens if I look at my calendar and I'm like, oh, I was supposed to spend this time, or I said I was going to do this and I didn't do it. Versus me saying in the moment, well, you know what? Here's the priority. I'm going to shift more time on this and have your calendar reflect that. I've never heard anybody use calendaring in that way.
Yeah, I call myself an aggressive calendar, and it has made all the difference in the world.
We've talked about Think Like a Pilot. We've talked about what you guys are doing in the event space. What else would you like to share with our audience?
Well, man, of course, if people want to get deeper into any of these subjects, I'd be happy to chat more. The Think Like a Pilot stuff, best way to learn more is thinklikeapilot.com, the website, or at Pilot Thinking on Instagram. And the best way to learn more about flying stuff, or event stuff rather, is the website there, which is GBM6, or as pilots would say, Golf Bravo Mike 6.com.
We're going to put all of the links to all of the relevant stuff in the show notes to make sure that people can get in contact with you. So Bobby, we're going to turn things around. you are the interviewer. I'm the interviewee. Do you have any questions for me?
Yes. When is the last time you felt that you were in flow state? And I'll define flow state for you so you know exactly what I'm looking for. Flow state is that moment when you feel like you were doing what you were born to do, and there's a sense of ecstatic timelessness. And from an engineering standpoint, you're experiencing high skill and high challenge. So you're doing something you're really good at and you find challenging.
The last time I experienced flow state is when I am putting together personalized success blueprints for my clients. So I use this process called the Engineer's Blueprint for Success. Focus on what matters most. The next step is visualize the life that you want. Then design the plan to close the gap. And the fourth step is to execute that plan. So this year, what we've been doing for all of our clients is putting together their personalized blueprint. Toward the end of last year, we did a Finish Strong series to understand what went well, what didn't work well, what needs improvement, looking at all different areas of life and of business. And so the past few weeks, I've taken time off from recording new podcast episodes. I'm just kicking that back up. But part of that time was spending developing these blueprints, kind of laying all that out. And it's wonderful when I'm able to talk to my clients and they see the blueprint of their own words, things that they said that they wanted to do, but now it's all in one place. And so we take them through this process, and then each quarter we decide, okay, what are the two or three things that we're going to focus on this quarter so that we can build up the habits and build the foundation so they can continue to evolve into who they want to become, or that their company continues to evolve into who it is becoming.
Nice. That kind of intentional growth is great stuff. That reminds me of one of the best management leadership things I ever heard was this metaphor about a bicycle. And basically, you can be on the front wheel or you can be on the back wheel, but you can't be on both. So you need to be aware of am I steering right now or am I pedaling?
Yeah.
Right? And this kind of gets back to multitasking. If you're doing both, it's going to get overwhelming. But all right, where am I going? Let's steer right now. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, I know where I'm going. I'm not wondering if that's the right place to go anymore. I'm just pumping the power into the machine to push us in that direction.
You know how to solve tough technical problems, but leading people, that's a different challenge. Stepping into leadership means more than just knowing your stuff. It's about inspiring, communicating, and navigating challenges with confidence. At Engineer Your Success, we help technical pros like you grow into leaders who just don't manage the work, but lead the people who do. If you're ready to lead with clarity and impact, visit engineeryoursuccessnow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you. I use the bicycling analogy when I talk about work-life balance, but I call it dynamic work-life balance.
Nice.
Because if you imagine that you're on a bicycle, you're pedaling, you are moving forward, you're continuing to move forward as long as you're pedaling. But there's some times where you're going to have to lean into one side or the other. You're not always going to be going down that straight road. So sometimes you're going to lean a little bit more into your business. There are going to be other times where you're leaning a little bit more into your family or your personal life, but you're continuing to pump the pedals to move forward.
I love that. Yeah, that's cool. I love your unique take on work-life balance. Circling back to calendars, a lot of people color code their calendars with personal stuff and work stuff, which is fine if that serves you, but I've actually done a different approach to colors on calendars, which is the thing I want to know at a glance visually is this thing time sensitive or can it move around? And that has been a game changer for me because we all have a list of things. A lot of people love lists, but lists are not plans. Lists are hypothetical goals that you may get to later. What I like is, all right, I want to spend an hour on this graphics brainstorm because I had an idea. I want to give it an hour of my time. So I'll just look at the calendar and say, okay, looks like at 4 o'clock today, I could carve out an hour for this. Great. And I'll put it on there, brainstorm that idea with a few notes. And then I'll put it with the color code that says, this needs an hour. This deserves an hour, but it doesn't have to be this hour.
Yeah.
And so that way, if Harvard calls and says, I want to do $1 million show with you next week, can we talk ASAP? I'm going to look at the calendar, say, whatever I have at 4 o'clock here can move. So yeah, Harvard, I could talk to you at four. And that's helpful because it protects. I still need an hour sometime, but I know which ones can shift. That's huge.
I like that approach. Looking at what are those things that are time sensitive, what can move and what can't move.
Yeah. You should hear what I have to say about email.
What are your insights from an email perspective?
Well, so Tim Ferriss, a very smart mind, has a quote that says, email is everyone else's agenda for your time. And I find that so interesting and so true. If you right now look at your inbox and you've got dozens, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, it's shocking what a lot of people have in their inbox. The weight of that is real. That's part of why you're feeling overwhelmed, because all of those things have an equal opportunity to fight for a tiny piece of your attention.
Yeah.
And so we need to get better at that. We can't manage our day out of our inbox because there's too much of it and they're not in any prioritized order. So first of all, just to illustrate the severity of this as a problem, think of physical mail instead, right? So if I wake up in the morning and I put my bathrobe on and I walk out to the mailbox and I've got 20 envelopes and I look at them and I say, some of these are important. Some of these I need to work on. Some of them are junk and can get thrown away. I'm just going to put them all back in the mailbox and go back inside. That's what we're doing when we have hundreds of emails piled up without deleting them, prioritizing them, or doing something about it. So that's not okay. So inbox zero is the other side of aggressive calendaring. So circling all the way back to pilot thinking, right?
Yeah.
Pilot thinking is summarized in three key words: aviate, navigate, communicate. So the aviate, we've talked about. Be present, be intentional, know how to have your attention on the right thing at the right time in the right order. Fly the airplane. That's number one. Everything else can wait. Because if I'm so distracted by talking to my passengers that I'm forgetting to fly in the right direction, that's a big problem. So organize, right? So aviate, fly the airplane. Navigate is, okay, I'm flying the airplane. Where am I going next? That's the calendar, right? Now I know exactly what the rest of the day looks like. I know what tomorrow looks like. I don't have to think about it right now because it's where it belongs on the calendar. And I'll get prompted and cued to shift through that journey in the right order, one thing at a time. So aviate and navigate and communicate. This is the third priority, but this is where email tends to be the primary platform for this. So that's the third thing you need to master to be thinking like a pilot successfully. So how do you do this? Especially if you have a trillion emails. Step one, archive all of your email. Get rid of it. It's still there. It's still searchable. You could still go swim around in those 10,000 emails if you choose to. You can find the thing that you forgot about, but get it out. Admit to yourself that this is no longer your priority because there's too much of it in no order. So put it away. Now you have a blank canvas, a clean slate. Take a deep breath and start processing things properly. So number one, when are you going to deal with this email? I know because of patterns and data that I need 1 hour on Monday mornings. I probably need another hour Monday afternoon. And guess where these hours are showing up in the calendar? These are when I know I need to be in my inbox, and that's when I'm going to process email. The way you do process email is important too. Start at the bottom. Don't start at the top. Start at the bottom. The oldest email gets your attention first. And yeah, if it's from 5 years ago, you got a problem, but that's why we maintain a small inbox.
Yeah.
So first, I do a pass from bottom to top of just quick stuff. Can I delete this? Can I respond really fast? Boom, 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 boom. Okay. And that compresses it, right? Because if I get to stuff that's like super urgent, do I need to get on this right now? Is this about a show I'm doing tomorrow? Because we had a show on Thursday, the day after I caught up on my email. So I did. I had a few things. Someone needs a certificate of insurance. We've got weather to deal with. Some of those things bubbled up to high priority tasks. But I don't do them while I'm in my inbox. I calendar them. So, okay, this one's important and I got to deal with fast. It's going to take about a half an hour. Great. Let's get the calendar up on the other screen. Let's put a half an hour right away, like right after this. Let's deal with this task. Now it exists in my pipeline with the right amount of time allocated. Now it's gone from my inbox. So you don't delete things from your inbox because they're done. You delete them because you've processed them.
Yeah. And there's some people that will have some heartburn or angst about
archiving or deleting those old emails. But here's the reality. That email from 5 years ago, it's not as important anymore. Like, archive it if you want to keep it, but you're not going to respond to it. The email from a year ago, if you respond to it, what they were looking for or asking for has likely passed. So it's okay to archive your email.
Yeah. Know that the existence of that email in your inbox is hurting you. It's making you worse at what you should be doing right now.
Bobby, I just want to thank you for spending some time to drop some wisdom here. We're learning how to think like a pilot. We've got some email inbox tips, calendaring tips, just different things that we need to be able to have success both in business and in life, because those same types of tools can help you in both areas. Anything else you want to share?
I think one last piece I'll suggest is pay attention to when your attention or focus is being hijacked. So if I was in this podcast with you right now and my phone was in my pocket, which it is not, and it buzzed, even if I don't look at it, right? Our phone buzzes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if I'm good at saying, I'm not going to look at my phone right now. It buzzed and it tried to yank my attention. So I need to be conscious of that. If I were to look at it and it said, Shake Shack's offering 15% off if you buy through DoorDash right now. We all get that kind of stuff, right? And I'm sorry to throw Shake Shack and DoorDash. I love both, for the record.
You're
but,
good.
But did I need to take my eyes and mind off of this to look at that for a second? Did it deserve to even vibrate my leg in this moment? And my answer is no. If your phone buzzes every time you get an email, if you're getting a push notification, that's what text messages are for. That's what phone calls are for. Those are things that say, I'd like you to read this right now if you can. Email's not like that. If you send me an email, I will see it within 24 hours. That's my commitment to the world. And I will then deal with it in the way that I choose being appropriate. So just be mindful of if something's taking your attention, even for a moment, and it's not where your attention belongs, do something about it. Change your notification settings for that app. Remember, social media companies are huge companies that are designed to keep your attention, and they're good at it. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but of course I'm spending too much time on Instagram sometimes. So again, just be intentional about how much time and energy and focus you're giving things and what's fighting to take it away.
Yeah, and I would add that be mindful of your energy levels. When are you most energetic? When are you most engaged? And can you begin to organize your calendar so that you're going to be most productive during those times where you're high energy? Some people are morning people. Other people have this real burst of energy in the afternoon. So you want to leverage your natural energy to those tasks that are going to help you be most productive.
That's a really good point. And by paying attention to that organic flow of where your mind wants to go in what order, you can actually create a really healthy baseline schedule of recurring events that shapes your whole week. So right now, if I look at a random week in November 2035, by default, it has a lot of things in the right order. When am I drinking coffee? When am I waking up? When am I going outside? When am I creative brainstorming? When am I doing graphics? When am I doing paperwork? All that. So instead of starting a brand new calendar from scratch every day or every week, by paying attention to what you just described, you can have a pretty great shot at what tomorrow probably looks like. And it's really satisfying to get to that point.
Yeah, I think some folks may be at a position in their productivity or in their schedules where they don't know how they're going to get there. So what we take people through is a process to delegate, eliminate, and automate.
Ooh.
So how can you then look at the activities that you have and begin to categorize them, right? Okay, this one I can delegate. This one I need to eliminate because it's a time waster. It's not contributing to where I want to go. And then automate is kind of a shoot off from delegate. So you're looking at, am I delegating this to a person or to AI or to a system that we're going to put together to help free up my schedule so that I can have the flexibility and the time to be able to look at when I have high energy, when I have low energy, and be able to build your schedule that way.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. I love that. I'm going to put that on my wall, honestly. Learning to delegate and learning to lead without micromanaging has been an interesting journey for me in the last few years, where the team on the events side, they don't need me to operate. It's because I've taught them and built the processes and been clear about the mission. I've built the framework for them to thrive. Now that they're thriving, if I show up at the wrong time, I'm just getting in their way. And that's been a hard lesson to learn. We had, like I said, we had a show on Thursday, big outdoor show in the cold. There was snow. It was a first time show. New client. I really wanted to make sure they were okay. I had just resurfaced from getting married. I was not feeling great. I came straight from urgent care with a bronchitis diagnosis. Wow. And I was like, I need to get to this show and make sure it's good. I feel like I'm not supporting my team. This is this nagging voice in my head. And I went, and as soon as I got there, I could see the event set up and I could see the team and I could see the client. Everything was fine. I didn't need to be there burning the candle at both ends to support them. And that's an interesting lesson for me that I'm still working through. And it's taking years to get there where I can be proud of the team. I can support them in the ways they need support, but I don't need to step on their toes everywhere. And to your point, by delegating and automating and stepping back in the right places, I free up my calendar, I free up my mind, I lead better, yes. And the product doesn't suffer, the company doesn't suffer, everybody wins, and now that frees up my focus to intentionally say, okay, what am I doing next? What should we be thinking about tomorrow or in a year? And that's hard growth, but it's super important, and I'm enjoying that journey too.
I'm sure we could find like 4 or 5 more topics just to talk about. And, you know, you will always have an open invitation to come back onto the podcast. We can do a part 2 or part 3 and just chop it up and have really good conversations. But I want to thank you for taking the time to provide value for us. And I'm going to end this podcast like I end every podcast. And that's this: many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that actually follow through, do it, and they are able to live the life of their dreams and run the business of their dreams. Bobby, I want to thank you for being part of that select few.